recording of a range of selected quotes from our research with children and young people, which has focused on their post-separation experiences of family law system services. Although I hasten to clarify that for ethical purposes, the quotes that were spoken by people who are not participants in our study. And before I begin, I'll just note that the views expressed in this paper today are the views of the report authors and may not reflect the views of the Australian Institute of Family Studies or the Australian Government Attorney General's Department, who commissioned and funded this research. So today in this presentation, I will briefly outline this research project before discussing the key research findings as they addressed our four primary research questions, which related to important issues from the perspective of children and young people when making post-separation parenting arrangements, the experiences of children and young people whose families have used family law system services, the services that children and young people found to be of assistance, and what effective professional practice looks like from the perspective of children and young people. As foreshadowed, the aim of this research was to investigate the experiences and needs of children and young people whose parents had separated and had accessed family law system services. And when we used this term, we were including judicial and legal and non-legal services such as the courts, independent children's lawyers, family consultants and single experts, family dispute resolution, individual and family post-separation counselling, domestic and family violence services, children's contact services, and the range of post-separation parenting programs. And in undertaking this research, the aim was to focus on children and young people's experiences and how the family law system may better meet their needs. The research is particularly significant in that it addresses a gap in the existing body of research by investigating this specific issue via data collected directly from children and young people themselves. In order to facilitate an in-depth investigation of these research questions, a purposive sample of families who had engaged with one or more family law system service and had resolved their family law matters were recruited via both legal and non-legal services. Semi-structured in-depth interviews were conducted with 61 children and young people and with one of their parents, with the interview schedules developed to cover the key themes emerging in the project research questions. The interviews were conducted between May 2017 and April this year, and face-to-face interviews were prioritised for children and young people, but interviews via Skype were undertaken in a very small number of situations where geographical access was a consideration, the participant was sufficient in age, they had access to the internet, and both the young person and their parent were comfortable with the use of this online technology for the purpose of the interview. Interviews with parents were undertaken by telephone and enabled the collection of demographic information by way of background to the data that was provided by the children and young people. These data enabled the research team to understand the services accessed by the families, as well as the pathways taken to resolve their family law matters. Against this backdrop, the data from the interviews with children and young people provided very rich insights into the experiences and needs of children and young people whose parents had separated and they had accessed family law system services. Although significant attempts were made to invite participation from families in all states and territories, with the research team liaising with over 500 legal and non-legal organisations and more closely with 70 of these to circulate the recruitment material, as we can see from the slide, the participating families in the study lived across Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland and South Australia. The families had an average of two children, and just over half of the participating children and young people were male. And the average age of young participants was 13 years, with 53% aged between 12 and 14 years, 31 aged 15 years or over, and 16% were aged between 10 and 11 years of age. When asked about the contact with family law system services during and after separation, parents reported having access with an average of eight services when finalising parenting matters, with the main services including lawyers, counselling, family dispute resolution or mediation, court services, family consultants and report writers, and independent children's lawyers. The main pathways identified as being used to finalise parenting arrangements were courts and counselling and FDR mediation. A high proportion of children and young people whose parents accessed judicial or legal professionals or family consultants recalled this occurring, as compared with non-legal professionals such as FDR. Of particular note, 50% of the participating parents reported that they had safety concerns for themselves and or their children in relation to the ongoing contact with the other parent, with emotional abuse, anger and mental health issues being the most common reasons cited for these concerns. So to our findings. A key theme emerging in our research was the importance of listening to and supporting children and young people through their parents' separation. And there were some similarities in relation to what children and young people said they needed from their parents and from family law system professionals. In relation to parents, most of our participating children and young people, in fact more than three quarters, indicated that they wanted their parents to listen to their perspectives and to communicate with them in relation to the separation and when making post-separation parenting and living. These children and young people wanted parents to provide them with the space and time to process events and for their parents to inquire about and to respect their views. And in relation to family law system services, most, over two-thirds, wanted professionals to listen more effectively to their views and experiences and to be provided with access to safe and effective options to participate in the decision-making process. Feeling safe and secure in their living environments was also nominated as important to participating children and young people. Children and young people participating in our research also indicated that they wanted open communication. They wanted to be kept informed about the decision-making process and the decisions made, and not to be kept in the dark. They wanted to better understand the separation process and the making of parenting arrangements involved. They wanted to have access to therapeutic assistance if they needed it and avenues to speak to independent third parties for support. And this was actually identified as assisting with their post-separation adjustment and with the development or restoration of their familial relationships. This process was described by children and young people as requiring their parents to listen to them and to invest in quality time with them. More specifically, more than one third, in fact 38% of children and young people who participated in our study, described wanting ongoing communication with parents and others to understand more about what was going on in the post-separation context over the longer term. They indicated that they wanted to be kept informed about the various aspects of the legal process, and this involved knowing more about who was representing their parents, who, if anyone, was representing them, when and how they might have an opportunity to communicate their views, what the possible outcomes were, who was determining the parenting arrangements, what the steps were in the decision-making process, when matters would be decided, and what support services might be available for them. In the longer term, children and young people valued flexibility in their arrangements and indicated that they needed to reflect safety concerns and that they may require to change to better reflect their best interests over the longer course. Unfortunately, however, most participating children and young people, in fact more than half, indicated that their views had no impact or limited impact on the decision-making process and that one or both of their parents had not listened to them. There was a distinct sense of dissatisfaction for these participants with their level of input and how they were kept informed. And there were very vivid descriptions of the lack of genuine engagement or meaningful involvement. There were certainly some positive experiences of participation with some children and young people who identified as being direct beneficiaries of family law system services. For example, the participant that we named Jeremy in the 12 to 14 year age bracket reflected on his inclusive FDR practitioner as converting his speech into action. Another participant that we named Robbie in the 15 years and over age bracket reflected on the ICL and the family consultant in his family's case as genuinely wanting what was best for everybody and that they were nice to talk to. But positive experiences were more likely to be described in relation to non-family law related services, and I'll return to these services towards the end of the presentation. More specifically, when children and young people participating in this study were asked about their experiences of family law system services that the families engaged with when separating, responses indicated mixed experiences in relation to the extent to which children and young people identified service providers as acknowledging their views and experiences. Most children or young people who recalled their families engaging with family law system service reported feeling negatively towards this process. They described, for example, limited or no interaction. If it was limited, it might have been infrequent or short in duration. It may have been difficult or uncomfortable, and this may have been because of the setting or perhaps a lack of rapport with the profession. They also described a perceived inaction on the part of family law system professionals, especially in response to safety concerns raised by children or young people, or interactions that were focused on what parents wanted. In relation to ICLs, most participating children or young people who could recall accessing an ICL reported meeting their ICL, with almost half of these participants indicating that the ICL acknowledged their views. In relation to family consultants or other family report writers, of those children and young people who could recall engaging with these professionals, almost half reported that they acknowledged in the process. Some participants described their disappointment and concern at the short duration of these interactions, which formed the basis for the recommendations in the family report. Some spoke about professionals who, from their perspective, did not genuinely listen to them, and those who they perceived to have breached their trust when recounting their experiences of family violence, only to be reunited with the perpetrator during the family report session, or that they faced repercussions from the parent upon the release of the report regarding what they'd said to the family consultant. And as we can see from the quotes here on the slide, some young participants identified this focus on adults as a particular issue, and this especially arose where they had no visibility of the decision-making process, or where they felt that the views had not been accurately heard or communicated or considered in the decision-making process. For example, the participant that we have named Oscar described how the legal process, in his words, was mainly focusing on what the parents wanted and not really what the children wanted. So overall, most participants described not having the opportunity to effectively participate, with the young participants commonly stating that they were either not consulted or not heard. Indeed, the responses of a substantial proportion of children and young people with experiences of the family law system suggested that the approaches developed by family law system professionals with whom they interacted actually operated in a way that limited their practical impact or effectively marginalised their involvement in the decision-making process. And this finding was exemplified by the quotes that are featured on the slide here and others in the report. They show not only a need to have a voice, but for their voice to be accurately heard, considered, and respected. For example, the participant that we have named Ryder felt that because of his age, his opinion really did not matter. And these findings are important to consider in the context of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, to which Australia is a signatory, which recognises the rights of children and young people to participate in decision-making relevant to their care and for their views to be given due weight in accordance with their age and maturity. And our research actually indicated that while steps taken to shield children and young people from their parents' negotiations or litigation may be benevolent in their intention, but this may also be associated with the experience of harm on the part of children and young people, where they have agency and capacity to participate in decisions affecting them, and this is not accommodated. And a number of children and young people in our study, in cases characterised by issues such as family violence, were particularly adamant about the importance of having a say, and in some of the cases of this nature where children were not afforded a say, they described living in unsafe parenting arrangements, and their frustration with living in unsafe parenting arrangements and not being heard resulted in one child in our sample running away and in two children in the sample destroying the parents' property. What also emerged very clearly from our research was that for most young participants, it was important to seek support by speaking to a trusted third party who had insight into and understanding of challenges of parental separation. The participants in our study, in fact, most of the participants in our study found that members of their family, for example, were a great source of support. And that could be a parent or a grandparent or an extended family member. While just over half of participants also identified friends and peers as part of their support structure in the context of their parents' separation. And this was particularly so where peers had some knowledge and experience of post-separation issues. Approximately half of participating young people described receiving support from their school during or after separation, with this support primarily from interactions with counsellors or teachers. A majority of participants had some engagement with mental health professionals and services, such as psychologists or psychiatrists or Headspace or Kids Helpline. More than three quarters of these young participants described these services as helpful in some capacity. What also emerged, however, was that there were issues with the visibility and accessibility of these services and the availability of this type of support in the context of the family law system. So in summary, what did participating children and young people identify as effective professional practice? They described seeking genuine and good listeners who employed child-inclusive approaches, who provided them with the space to speak and who listened effectively to their views and experiences, who took steps to build trust and rapport with them, who enabled them to participate and be accurately heard in the decision-making process, who engaged in open communication and kept them independently informed, giving them a clear and accurate explanation of the process, its progress, and of the decisions being made. Participating children and young people wanted to feel safe and secure in their living arrangements, and to this end, they sought proactive professionals who would act protectively, as well as ongoing and meaningful communication and openness to flexibility and change. So in a nutshell, in the words of one of our young participants, they called for giving children a bigger voice more of the time. And a need was also identified for training and professional development to improve professionals' capacity to trust with and support for children and young people to communicate with them and to know how best to keep them informed so that they can demonstrate to them that their views are important, that they have been heard, and how they have been considered in the decision-making process. And I'll give the last word on effective practice to the participants that we've named. Savannah calling for professionals less to be more down to earth and to be more human. And to Zoe, who calls for professionals to follow through and to do what they say they will do and to put themselves in the shoes of children and young people. And maybe I conclude by thanking the Australian Attorney General's Department, the AFS Executive, my co-authors and researchers of this study, Edward Dunstan, Dinika Rupani and Jesse Dunstan, and most importantly, the children and young people and parents who participated in this research. Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to participate in today's webinar. And I will also acknowledge that the views that I express may not be those of the Australian Institute of Family Studies and UnitedCare. I would also like to thank Australian Institute of Family Studies and UnitedCare in Queensland for the opportunity to participate today. So in this presentation, I'm going to be focusing on how child-inclusive practice in family law and family relationship services can be achieved through paradigm change. Thinking about why and when it's important to include children in processes where matters and decisions that will affect and impact on them are being discussed, and how to approach this non-adversarially. Also hearing from children and young people about their safety and security and how this can be taken into account. So we know that the key findings of the research, in summary, have found that the family law system professionals should listen more to their views and experiences, and for that to be given due consideration. The importance to them that when parents and professionals are having conversations about what is happening, is going to happen, they are also given opportunity to have a say about their lived experience, needs, concerns, views, and expectations. They should get information about what's going to happen when decisions have been made, an opportunity to receive and give feedback. And the professionals can learn how to do this in the best interests of children and young people and their safety. These are the views of the young people consulted in the research. Everyone else is having a say. Give children and young people a bigger voice. Giving the slip to parents' conflicted ways of relating and bringing the focus back to the children in children's matters. Recent reforms to the Australian family law system and the Family Law Act 1975 embrace articles in the UN Convention of the Rights of the Child. We will consider articles 12, 13, 18, and 19 in this presentation. Also consider how child-focused practice in a family law context could support and assist children affected by long-term high conflict, domestic violence, and attachment trauma post-separation. We can take an educative approach to informing parents of the UN Convention, ratified by Australia in 1990 and embraced in the Family Law Act. This approach to informing parents of the importance and value of child-inclusive process has had a strong impact at FRC Logan in Queensland on how they feel about their children participating. And this approach arose out of an action research project that we undertook in 2014 to evidence the effectiveness of child inclusive practice in the context of an FRC and making it possible through seriously evaluating our thinking, our processes and our approaches and emerging new practice during that period of action research. Taking this approach and educating parents about the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child also validates the intention of child inclusive practice, as stated in Article 12, and brings clarity for practitioners when they're getting caught up in the polemics and politics of such practices. And I'll just add to that that we note often that parents appreciate having this information because they're totally unaware of it. Young people consulted in the research have said that adults and professionals can learn how to be more natural with them and have conversations about their lived experience for their safety, psychological, emotional, and physical care. And for this to be given primary consideration in matters where their living and time spent and parenting arrangements are being discussed and decisions being made. This view is directly in line with the key articles of the UN Convention 12, 13, 18, and 19. Communication in conversations with children in family law matters can be scaffolded. This PD has been provided to FDR professionals at FRC Logan Unitedcare. It's important to have purposeful and intentional conversations that invite the child and young people's personal story and feedback. I'll just give you a brief example of a scaffolded conversation. What's it like to be you in your family situation? How do you describe that experience, or how would you describe that experience? What are the things that are going okay? What's not so okay? I need to change. How have you coped when things are not okay? How do you see things can improve for you? What would you like to stay the same? What are your hopes for yourself now and in the future? What do you expect from significant adults in your life right now? Is there anything you would like to say to any of them about this and you haven't been able to do so? What can I, or the service, do that would help your hopes and expectations to be heard and taken into account? Narrative practice is a skill that can be learned as professional development training. And this is in responding well to converting speech into action, as we have heard from a young person in the previous presentation. To share this quote with you from the National Commissioner, Megan Mitchell, as I think it positions our predicament and dilemma very well. As professionals, we can find the will and the way to bring clarity and solution-focused responses in complex procedures. The primary purpose being to bring young peoples into having a say, as stated in Article 12 of the UN Convention. When we can support parents through our processes to hear the experience, views and wishes of the children, this serves to bring a readiness to look beyond their own needs and seriously consider the needs of their children, building on strengths and positioning them as parents, not litigants, focusing on the parenting of their children, their best interests, what they need for happiness and healthy development. However, creating opportunities for children to have their views and opinions heard should be independent of the intention to gather information or bring the feedback for disputing parents. Child inclusive practices in over 10 years since the reforms in the family law system and introduction of family dispute resolution indicates clearly there are significant individual and systemic barriers that are impacting the effectiveness of child participation practices. I'd like you to consider a paradigm for advancing inclusive practice. This is a paradigm that I want to share with you, and I'm sure that many people have many ideas about what that paradigm could look like. Young people are capable and have the right to have a say about their views and opinions and what is and is not in their best interests, as they are affected by parental separation in every area of their lives. Family law professionals are capable of changing systems and organisational culture in ways that place children and young people first and foremost in accessing justice. We will create ways and means to do this. Family law professionals can communicate with children and young people and adults safely using child-focused, non-adversarial means for addressing family violence, family safety, and parenting after separation. We will learn what to do from consulting young people and professionals who currently do this. Move away from traditional models of mediation and implement all the aspects of more contemporary dispute resolution practice in family dispute resolution, bringing a richer and more holistic experience to resolving disputes and dissolving acrimonious ways of relating about children out of court. Courts give greater weight to the requirement to attempt family dispute resolution when parents refuse or fail to participate, and order participation as the most effective means of resolving disputes, restoring safety and ensuring children's needs and interests are given the highest priority. When court is the best and safest option, court family consultants can meet with young people and parents in family relationship friendly work areas. Child and family relationship professionals and family law professionals can work together for child safety and strengthening relationships, whilst also protecting children and young people from being overlooked and making their valuable contribution to changing the way parenting disputes after separation are managed. So what of many FDR child inclusive practitioners who consult frequently with children said? Children's views about what is okay, not okay in their experience of family separation and their expectations for quality of life and safety are aligned with the best interests of children, as expressed in family law and key articles in the UN Convention. The child or young person's own story of what's been happening is generally quite consistent with what we know from what we have heard in assessment conversations with their parents. What can be different is how they describe how we're affected and are affected and the impact on their relationships and quality of life. When parents hear this, it brings insight to their own behaviour. What is okay and what needs to change? If the purpose is to make arrangements that serve children and young people's best interests, surely this insight is the most authentic and compelling in guiding solutions, focus and decisions. Sustainable care and parenting plans are achievable when all concerned parties can have a say about their interests. It's not possible. However, such circumstances are limited and should not be considered the norm. Evidence effectiveness of child inclusive practice in FDR in an FRC. In 2012, FRC Logan and research activity over a period of 12 months under the ship and management of the presenter. The project included all staff and active clients and undertook to evaluate the effectiveness of two model pathways of child inclusive practice. One child consultant responding to referrals to screen out based on parental capacity assessment. An FDRP also trained as a child consultant, acting as an FDRP and child practitioner, and as totally and using a totally inclusive screening in approach for all children over school age. Non-inclusion was in response to the child or young person's developmental presentations or health capacity or the suitability of FDR as an assessment outcome. The action research activities included exploring the beliefs, values and attitudes of the practitioners about children, young people and their capacity for participation in child inclusive FDR. Reflection on the FRC culture and the positioning of practitioners in client engagement. Review of all of the administrative processes and procedures in FDR from the first point of contact with parents and collecting feedback from children and parents pre-FDR and post-FDR. The outcomes of this action research and the impact on service delivery has been steady increase in child participation, increased knowledge and confidence in parents of the purpose and value of child inclusion in FDR. Increased knowledge, clarity and confidence in FDRPs and general staff of the purpose and value of child inclusion in FDR. Advancement of family dispute resolution practitioner skills and a collective impact for the emergence of fully focused child inclusive culture in the service. A reduction in the frequency of parents returning to FDR in a 3 to 6 month period. A reduction in the number of Section 60I certificates issued. And here you can see how the participation rates of children and young people have advanced since 2013 using this approach. So what can we do to communicate effectively with children and young people outside of court? Develop transparent policies, processes and procedures for the information of staff and clients that position young people as having the same human rights and intelligence capability as adults. Child inclusive culture involves all staff and is explained to clients from the first point of contact. Meet with children and young people for their own right and discuss age appropriately, how they see things and listen to what they say can help them and their family. Provide information in age appropriate language about the purpose of inclusion for children and young people. Develop the narrative skills to feel confidently and competently capable to have these conversations with parents about their behaviour and their actions getting in the way of their children and young people feeling safe, respected, and having a meaningful relationship. Motivating the will to change. Use solo practitioners in child inclusive process wherever possible. and coordinate administrative systems to be timely, flexible and well communicated to everyone involved. It's time to move away from theory to practice with clarity, confidence and determination, as we are now seeing the new generation emerging with the same, if not more, impacts of intractable and unresolved parenting disputes, as were highlighted in the research that informed the first reforms to the Australian family law system in 2006. Every picture tells a story. Through our signatory to the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, we can all act to enable children's rights and create opportunity for them to have a say, express their lived experience and share their views on what they consider to be parenting arrangements and relationships that serve their best interests and rights. When we do this, we show that we value, respect and present them and protect them.
Thank you very much, Norma, and thanks, Rachel, as well. As a former youth worker, this is hearing the voices of children is something that's really close to my heart, so it's fantastic to hear this reflected in both the research that's happening and also in practice, Norma. It's been fantastic, Norma, to hear your practice experience and some real concrete examples of how this work is being done. It's a really nice accompaniment to the work that Rachel and her team have done. Thank you very much to Rachel Carson and Norma Williams, and thank you very much to everyone for attending today. We had heaps of questions come through that we couldn't get to, so remind you all again to link into the forum where we can get to some of those questions. So do follow the link on your screen there that will take you to that forum on our website to continue the conversation. So thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.